I'm Gab. He's Jules. It's kind of blue skies over Westland, maybe because you're back.
Yeah.
After the show with Nadim again. Just kidding. We kid because we love it. But Jules, we have a big show because we've got major happenings in the Premier League title race. We're going to talk about that. We're going to continue with the Ferran Torres saga.
Yes.
It's not over. Make no mistake about that. But let's start at Liverpool because, okay, let's go all Schadenfreude, and we're going to get into the too many games thing. So you have Jurgen Klopp complaining about there's no five subs, too many games, blah, 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 COVID, yada, yada, yada. They go a whole bunch of games without playing. They put out a lineup which I think, other than Tsimikas for Robertson and Oxlade-Chamberlain for Thiago Alcantara, is essentially their best 11.
It is.
Against a Leicester team that have, 50 people missing and Didi and Amarty at the back and whatever. Yeah.
And it played 2 days before.
And it played 2 days before against a minor team called Manchester City.
Yeah.
Right? And what happens? Football, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I was there. Liverpool was so sloppy. It was just, it was very, very easy to see it from the beginning. Even if Salah scores the penalty, that changes everything. They're still sloppy. The passing was terrible. The lack of movement. It was just not them. And that's what Klopp said. He said we played 40% maybe of our ability. I don't know why. I don't know if maybe the fact that he didn't play against Leeds on Boxing Day disrupted a bit the rhythm that they had. I don't know, because you would think that not playing and made them fitter. But there was something clearly not going. It can't just be Thiago not being there or Robertson not being there. Tsimikas didn't have a bad game. He saved in front of Vardy at some point. Going forward, he was good. He had a lot of energy. So, I don't know. It was really strange. Watching there, I was like, well, this is really, really strange.
Okay, now, the analytics guy in me would come back to you and point out that, well, if we bring up expected goals, Liverpool will roll over 2-3-3,
I think.
The reality is not just the Salah penalty and you know when he follows up with a header goes off the bar. Any of those other chances, the Mane chance, they had enough chances.
Yeah, completely.
Those chances going, we don't have this conversation, right?
Well, we have the conversation that they didn't play well, and that they were not good. They could have won the game easy, not being good, and that could have still be worrying maybe. Although there's a lot of games that you win without being good. But I think we still have that conversation of Salah looks tired and he's off to the African Cup of Nations after the Chelsea game on Sunday. Mane doesn't look himself either. Again, even if he had scored, I think there were still a few question marks over, you know, the current form of that team.
The Chelsea game coming up in the new year is obviously huge. But in terms of this game specifically, Klopp came out afterwards and said, don't look at me. I'm not going to blame anybody. I'm going to blame myself. We didn't play well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to look for any excuses. And there was this whole thing about, you know, on social media, sort of in between Klopp speaking.
Yeah.
And you know, oh, there, you know, like, oh, Klopp excuse bingo in 3-2-1 and whatever. All that said, and we talked about Leicester a little bit on Monday, but I want to get your view because was this just, for me, this, and I look at the defending a lot, for me this was a lot of very good defending. It wasn't, it was very good defending, riding, you know, somebody like Madison when he gets hot and he has the opportunities. There's nothing wrong with that if you're Brendan Rodgers in this situation. You've got Tielemans on one leg, on the bench, in fact, coming on. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's what you have to do anyway. I think that's what you have to do against Liverpool at home. Going away to City is different, I think, in the way you set up and the way you approach the game. At home to Liverpool, that's what you have to do. You put players who run a lot in midfield. Choudhury is a decent player, but all he does is the activity. There's not much with the ball. Soumaré, I think, has the potential to be very good, but right now he just has to be solid and go into challenges and everything. And Jewsbury Hall, that's where who I love, by the way, who's a local kid, but this is what he's good at as well. So I think they were just set up there to work hard, run a lot, disrupt as much as they can Liverpool and the way they play, they use the ball, and then hope for something on the counter, which, in fairness, came close a couple of times, Madison, Vardy, and then Lookman did it when they changed formation, which I think was really good from Rodgers to change the system when he did.
You're talking about moving away from the diamond to the 4-3-3. So
the
diamond had to
play it, I think.
You had to congest it, because otherwise you're going to overrun you.
Yeah, completely. But then I think they switched at the right time. I was a bit surprised that Liverpool didn't react straight away to the change. I thought, you know, I think Henderson, and you see on the goal, considering Trent defending against Lookman now one-on-one, before that he was pretty much against Iheanacho, which was never going to take him on. He doesn't have the pace or anything. Lookman was a completely different challenge for Alexander-Arnold, and I just don't think he was given any help by Henderson, as we saw on the goal. And I was a bit surprised that Liverpool didn't adapt quicker to the change of formation from Leicester.
Not much help from Van Dijk either, although what I really impressed me about what Lookman did was, I mean, we in Italian we say prendere il tempo, taking the time, right? Essentially, he messed up Van Dijk's timing. Van Dijk was expecting him to curl it the other way, and he shot quickly and surprised him on the near post. To me, I kind of feel like saying bravo Lookman more than going and blaming Van Dijk, the way some people have. Jules, I don't want to read too much into the defeat, because defeat happens. Because Liverpool had more than enough chances to win, and we're so geared on results, games come so thick and fast at this stage of the year that we don't dwell on it. However, you were there, and you had a great view of Klopp.
Yeah,
Klopp wasn't happy the way they were lining up tactically against the Diamond in that first half. Can you just run us through that? Maybe, you know, explain a little bit about what got him so angry.
Yeah, because I could see him on the touchline, although we could not hear what he was saying. But he was very, very agitated. And after the game, when we had a really interesting interview, because he was saying, like, listen, I don't understand why we were so bad. He said, I thought we started well, and then I don't understand why we were so bad. But something very interesting he said, against when you play against a Diamond midfield, he said, there's a few things that you have to do really well. The most important one is to move the ball from right to left. Okay, no problem. But always finding the extra pass, because that will force their midfield or, you know, their setup to come out at you. Whether usually, let's say, and we've seen Liverpool doing a lot, the diagonals between right back and left back. So Trent will often switch the play to Robertson, right? In this game, and Trent did it a few times in the first half, and then I could see Klopp often shouts at Trent. There's a lot of things that Trent does in a game, even when Trent is at his best, that Klopp doesn't like.
I kind of feel he shouts at him a lot because for at least half the game, he's right there, right next to him.
Yeah, of course. You're right. And Trent probably hates the half where he's like by the by the benches.
Yeah, but analytics guys, why don't you guys go out and track Trent's performances when he's got Klopp shouting at him, and in the other half of games when he's on the other side.
When he's on the other side. And basically, what Klopp wanted, instead of Trent switching the play to Tsimikas straight away, he wanted the ball to go from Trent to Matip, Matip to Van Dijk, and Van Dijk to Tsimikas, to every time have a Leicester player coming out instead of just moving and shuffling easily.
This is an audio medium, but if you can essentially picture this, just for those who don't get it, it's his basic tactics. But essentially, with the Diamond, you're defending narrow. It's reminiscent of the way United defend, for example, the fourth with Andre Rangnick. And so you want to try to move that block of four or disrupt that block of four as much as you can. If you hit the diagonal straight away, yes, Tsimikas gets the ball in a wide area and he's got nothing but green grass in front of him. And he can attack quickly down that wing. However, the block of four, they can just move back.
Shuffle
across or shuffle back, and it's easier for them to defend the cross. So
completely.
That's what he's talking about. If I have that extra pass, I create that extra uncertainty. Somebody has to go and shut the player down. Otherwise, Matip goes and runs 30 yards. I just wanted to explain it for people who maybe aren't as granular X's and O's.
And the club said to me, like, I shouted all game for the extra pass. He said, at halftime, I told them again, go do the extra pass. And he said it didn't come enough. And even if they created some chances, and I think the Mane one probably comes on a move that has the extra pass in it. So clearly they could have done it. I don't know why they didn't do it. Maybe physically.
So they don't often play against
against
the Diamond.
And maybe that's why. They used to. I mean, that switch from right to left, we've seen it so many times. Yeah. We've seen goals from Trent to Robertson, even against the Spurs. The Robertson goal against Spurs was slightly different. But so this is maybe because he's so engrossed into what they do.
Ingrained. Yeah.
That it was hard for them to switch to something different, and maybe the fact that Thiago Alcantara, who I think would have been perfect in that game, is watching that Leicester game when I thought, okay, this is the kind of games where you would need Thiago Alcantara so much, not just because of all the possession, but just because he's so perfect for the extra pass every time, compared to an Oxlade-Chamberlain who didn't have a bad game. But what he does usually is he likes running with the ball.
No, and also Thiago Alcantara can also unlock the defense. He can come up with that creative pass in a way that Henderson and Fabinho and Oxlade Chamberlain aren't.
Yeah, I
would argue also a fit Firmino from the beginning might have also made a difference.
I find Jota so frustrating.
Because sometimes Jota had a bad game, but Firmino would have given you the option of dropping deeper, of pressing the man in front of the back four, of opening up that space, of allowing Salah and, you know, I mean,
Jota is a great player and he's got an amazing record and, you know, the goal ratio is fantastic. But there are games where he doesn't give the team enough in possession, you know, and I'm just not saying in terms of finishing. Finishing is great, but I mean, David Trezeguet was an amazing finisher. That's what he used to do, you know. I would want Jota to do so much more in that team than certainly what he did against Leicester. That I just find it a bit frustrating.
Jota's also essentially a winger or a second striker playing center forward.
But he plays there for a reason too.
Sorry,
he plays there because he's not a pure in and out striker.
No. But he's also not. He also doesn't have Firmino's skill set.
Yeah, that's why.
It's looking ahead now. This Liverpool game against Chelsea. I know we don't often preview things, whatever, on Sunday. Is it a must win or is it a can't lose for Liverpool in terms of the title race? Notice a subtle difference.
Title race is a must win, and even if they win it, I think it's already a bit further. And it's funny because if there's one thing with Klopp,
they have a game in hand.
But still, I still think that. So winning it, they have to anyway. But right. I think it's a long shot. The one thing with Klopp, for all the listeners who one day will maybe interview Klopp or speak to Klopp, don't mention points gap. Don't mention points. Don't mention tables, ranking. Because the poor guy before me interviewing him for, I think, Swedish, Danish TV or Norwegian TV, got roasted for saying, like, "Oh, you're 6 points behind City." You know, at the time, is it? He goes, "Like, I don't care about points. Leave me alone with points. I don't care about points. You know, I don't care about gaps. Let me focus on my team, my players." And Tuchel said something very similar after the Chelsea draw against Brighton too. So, I just think it's already a big gap. So, win 100% at all costs.
I want to take this into a slightly different direction, almost a philosophical argument. We touched upon this on the show. Craig Burley had very strong views, and I agree in part with some of them, which is the festive program here in England, where, you know, essentially you play four games in 14 days. Every league in Europe takes a break between Christmas and New Year's.
Yeah.
The Premier League, not only do they not take a break, they start playing more. Not just the Premier League, all of English football.
Yeah.
And you always get this familiar refrain from managers, especially foreign ones. Yeah. They complain about this. Many years ago, they used to say, it's the reason why England don't win the World Cup is because they play so much and don't have a winter break. Now they kind of have that half winter break, although who knows if that's going to happen this year because they have to make up so many games.
Yeah.
Obviously, we have COVID this year. There's a theme of the five substitutes as well. But it's interesting to me because, obviously, you and I are guests in this country, right? We love the Premier League.
We love
it. We like living here. Otherwise, we wouldn't live somewhere else. It is part of it. And these games are entertaining from a neutral perspective.
Yeah, of course.
But there's a part of me that also says, okay, they're entertaining. But are they good? Or are they entertaining because it stretches you to go and do something? You have to go and do something well, which isn't really part of football or of planning. Did you see what I'm saying?
Listen, I've been to three games in this festive period. Spurs Palace on Boxing Day. This was not a good game. I know it's a 3-0 win and we saw goals, empty seats everywhere, and not a good game. The Leicester-Liverpool game, it was a heroic win for Leicester, and we will give them some praise a bit in a bit. And Brendan Rodgers was very, this was not a good game. It was not a good game at all. The Chelsea-Brighton, as well as Brighton played and completely deserved the point that they won there, it was not a good game, apart from maybe the last half hour. And I'm sorry, I agree with you 100%.
You don't know what my view is. I haven't expressed my view. Okay.
I thought your view was
I agree with you.
Of the quality of the Premier League, because the whole world is watching. This is the only league player. Okay, Portugal have restarted now. Spain will do soon, but still, this is the only league now. So everybody is watching even more than usual, and this is the kind of spectacle. Brentford City was not a good game. It was not a good game at all, and there's plenty others that we can mention that were not good at all in this festive period again. Even if there was loads of goals, the City, Leicester, there was loads of goals, etc. I'm not even sure that technically the quality was there. Sorry, this is to the detriment of it. But it will never change.
I think we need to isolate this argument because when people bring this up, it turns into, Klopp, Tuchel, Pep making excuses. Or it turns into, well, they knew it was like this when they came. Yeah, of course they knew it was like this when they came, sure. But it doesn't mean that they accept it as part of the thing. It doesn't mean that they necessarily think, oh, this is great for football. This is what I want to do, right? The other argument about its tradition. So the reason that they do this is that it goes back to the, young guns out there gather around. It goes back to the early days of football in this country where there was no television, but you had, everybody. It's the same reason they would play at 3 o'clock on Saturdays. That's the traditional time, right? It's because before unions, or when unions were weak, you had situations where, people worked 5 days a week and then they worked Saturday mornings. And then the whole archetype is in the northern town. Everybody would return. They'd have their lunch, except they would call it dinner because up north they call lunch dinner. So it's their tradition. That's fine. Around noon or 1 o'clock, and then they would walk two blocks to their stadium among the terraced houses and go to the game, right? So that's why it's 3 o'clock on Saturday. Now, over the holiday period, the factory owners had to shut the factories on Boxing Day and New Year's Day. There was no two ways around it. Yep. We're up to them. No doubt they would have kept them open, but, even they weren't that Scrooge-ish. And so they're like, we have all these workers sitting around. Oh, what are they going to do? Oh, they're all going to go and drink all day because that's what we assume working class people do. I know. Let's kill two birds with one stone. Let's have football on Boxing Day. Let's have football on New Year's Day. And it worked great because a lot of times you had kids at home as well, obviously from schools. So the kids would go to the game. So you get massive attendances. Most clubs, back in the days when, you just walked through a turnstile and somebody kind of checked and you had terraces so you could pack as many people in there as possible. Most clubs' record attendances were either Boxing Day or New Year's Day over the festive period, right? Stamford Bridge, I think the record attendance is like 110,000. I don't even want to think about how you had 110,000 people in that place. It's no bigger than it is today, right? So that's where it comes from.
Yeah.
Now, needless to say, the world has changed a little bit. Right? Yeah. Now the big driver is television. But again, with television, and we have to create a product so that we can charge people their TV subscriptions and give the sponsors the visibility. My only question is, do we still have to play these many games? Because frankly, Boxing Day, important tradition, fine. But then why do you have five games all kicking off at the same time?
Yeah.
Right? And by the way, the whole thing about 3 o'clock back out, blah, 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 lower leagues. Funny enough, that goes out the window on Boxing Day. I'm just wondering if there aren't more creative ways that you can do that. Maybe get rid of this midweek session. The one on the 28th.
Yeah.
And maybe spread those games across those evenings over the holidays, evenings and afternoons. So that maybe on Boxing Day, maybe you have kickoffs at 12, 2, 4, 6, and 8. And then you've got games at 6 and 8 the next day. And then, there are other solutions where you can keep this whole, look, the kids are off school. Let's all take them to the ground. And the reason I say this, I go back to what you said before. Good games, right?
Yeah, completely.
I don't know if you're a boxing fan, right? But like we won or MMA, right? He's retired now, but why isn't Conor McGregor, who's the guy he doesn't like? The crazy, was he Uzbek? What?
Yeah.
You know what
Khabib,
I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Oh, look, it's a spectacle. Why don't those two guys fight every month? right? Wouldn't that be great? Or every week. Let's make it a weekly thing.
Yeah.
You know, let's have Tyson Fury against that other dude.
Deontay Wilder.
Why don't we do that every week? Yeah, think about that. Wouldn't that be awesome, like that. Right?
Yeah.
No, it wouldn't. Because those guys would probably think they'd suck. Because you need to prepare.
Yeah.
You need to be prepared. And on top of that, and this is the single biggest complaint you get from managers, is we pay these managers a ton of money, right? Pep Guardiola, the philosophy. But if you don't give the guy time to work on the training pitch, same thing with Rangnick. We'll get to that later in his 4-2-2-2. Takes time to learn this.
Yeah.
If you don't have time to go and do your work as a coach, if all you're doing is picking lineups and making substitutions, that is a tiny part of a coach's job. And so in the end, I don't think the quality is as good. This is before you get into arguments about player welfare and all this nonsense, right? I mean, it's not nonsense. It's important too.
You know what I find fascinating is, so this is, obviously, this was Ralf Rangnick's first time playing through the festive period. And he was clearly very excited.
It's not over.
Yeah. But before the Newcastle game, he was like...
He's as excited as Rangnick gets.
But yeah, but he said, like, this is amazing. You know, for me, like, Boxing Day, the biggest tradition, blah, 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 in football. Although he didn't play Boxing Day, he played 27th, but still. It was also Thomas Tuchel's first festive period.
Right.
He didn't have the same excitement whatsoever at all about Boxing Day and playing 3 games in 6 days or whatever it was, or 4 games in 8 days. And I find the divide, and I'm sure the divide is amongst all the fans in this country, the ones saying, yeah, this has to stay, we can't touch it, this is English football for you. The ones who say, like, okay, Boxing Day is great, but like us, there's too many games, and it's a disservice to the clubs, the players, the spectacle, everything you want.
The fans, the sponsors,
yeah,
the broadcasters,
yeah. You know, and I really think it's fascinating. And from the way the continent sees it, they're all like, oh, this is great. We all would love a Boxing Day in our leagues. But they also say, like, yeah, but we like the holiday and the break and the 2 weeks, the 2 weeks break, because it's doing good for the players and for our league. And I just find that fascinating. I don't think that it will ever change. I think you will keep playing and playing and playing again. But I think it's a great debate to have.
Yeah, I mean, on top of that, with the COVIDs and the postponement, obviously there's a whole different spin on it as well. And this year, it's particularly obvious.
Yeah, but it should have changed this year.
But these aren't high-quality games. You can say they're great games because they're exciting. What an exciting comeback and blah, blah, blah. But, like, you know, we talked about this with Nathan on Monday. Man City against Leicester, right? You have 30 divine minutes against a undermanned Leicester team, right? And then they concede 3 goals. And again, maybe it's not because they're tired, because they're not football. Maybe whatever the reason is, like, these games end up not being high-quality games. And if I'm going to just have games that are entertaining but not high-quality, then do I, as an owner, do I need to go and spend all this money on talented players and talented coaches?
No, you're right.
And give them state-of-the-art facilities? I just think it's something to look at. And in terms of the tradition side, what I've worked out, I can never quite work it out in this country, especially when it comes to football. Because on the one hand, it's all about tradition, and they're very conservative. They don't like change, 5 substitutes, VAR, oh, no, we don't know. But then they're also incredibly innovative, because you look at the stadiums that they built after Hillsborough. You look at, you know, even stupid things like, you know, the squad numbers and the names on the back of shirts, right? They introduced it into football.
Yeah.
I think they like innovation when it's innovation that they come up with. When it comes from elsewhere, you know, you immediately get the knee-jerk old guard. I think it's a debate. It's a debate worth having. And that's one. You're adamant it's not going to change.
Yeah. I think I really believe that they were going to scrap this 28 this season. Of all seasons, this was the one really to give the players a bit of a break. And they didn't even do it in this season. I can't see them doing it. And you know what? Brendan Rodgers with his heroes on Tuesday against Liverpool, this is a great story. And people will remember in Leicester, oh, that famous win against Liverpool 2 days after playing City. You know, you play the last two English champions, blah, blah, blah. Of course, it's great. It worked. But had they lost that game 3-0, which, as we said, as poorly as Liverpool played, they could have won that game 3-0 without Kasper Schmeichel being amazing. What would Rodgers would have said? Rodgers would have said, this is crazy. You've made us play City and Liverpool back to back with 2 days apart. This is crazy. This is not. And we would have the similar debate, but with a different narrative. And I think this is a great win. And yeah, they played well and they were well set up. Amartey and Ndidi did a great job. Everything you want. Schmeichel is great and the younger players are good, but...
Well, and the other thing, I think, we're praising Rodgers for the result, for the fight back. The
yeah, and goals. He deserves it.
We're deserving that.
It was a really good...
But we're praising Rodgers for working in emergency situations. To make an analogy, right? Let's imagine you're a heart surgeon and you're the greatest heart surgeon in the world and you do the most sophisticated keyhole surgery, whatever. And then we praise you because you're walking down the street, there's an accident, and you apply brilliant first aid to somebody, you know, using the tissue in your pocket. That's kind of what Rodgers is doing. No, you know what I'm saying? He's handled it exceptionally well. It doesn't tell me much about how good Rodgers is because it's an emergency situation that he's handling. You know, it tells you a little bit, but that's what I find interesting about it. Whatever the case, like we said, Chelsea-Liverpool will be absolutely big. And we'll leave it to you, dear listener, whether it's must win or can't lose. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Liverpool. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
A late Danny Welbeck goal means Chelsea are held at home by Brighton. Jules, the good news is they're second for now. The bad news is they've won 2 of their last 5, and Thomas Tuchel says it's, quote, stupid to think they're in the title race.
Yeah, he was not happy at all after the game. I think 3 draws in the last 4 at home. The win, the one that was not a draw was the win against Leeds 3-2. That should not have been a win. So one, they're not playing well. Even if I thought at times it was a bit better against Brighton. Brighton are just such a lovely team to watch. Great team. It's just you can't allow 18 or 17 shots. Like Brighton had 18 shots in the game at Stamford Bridge. Just and one is very unlike Tuchel and his teams. And 2, you just can't allow... Eventually, one of them will go in. And they were maybe lucky that Brighton didn't score earlier. But I don't know what's going on with the midfield and Jorginho and Kovacic. Oh, Kovacic is back from injury with Jorginho. I don't know what's happening with the defending. Like, the header by Welbeck. Welbeck should never score. It's a great header. But Rudiger and Chalobah
are either side
asleep.
Of him.
They're opening
both
Christmas
are big
presents.
Boys. Yeah, exactly. They're opening late Christmas
presents. Yeah, it's terrible. And then they don't take the chances. The Hudson-Odoi 2v1 with Mann. I'm like, come on. You know, why are you passing the ball even? So I don't know if it's a lack of confidence because of the bad, like, average results. Because they're not bad results, but they're average results. I don't know if they're tired. I don't know if... But you've lost Reece James to what looked like a really bad injury. On the back of already the bad news about Chilwell. The only good news is Lukaku scoring again, but... I think it's pretty worrying, to be fair.
Yeah, this is where Tuchel, what we talked about, having time to work. Tuchel, you're going to have to work in double quick time.
Finances, for sure. Sticking with Chelsea, the club confirmed, as we've just mentioned, that Ben Chilwell will undergo surgery, which means that he's out for the rest of the season on the ACL. And then Reece James went off for what looks like a bad injury, Gab. They're now linked with Lucas Digne. Do you think that would be a good signing, or do they need another left back?
It depends how Reece James is doing. Reece James, of course, can play left back. I have no doubts there, and obviously they have Marcos Alonso, who runs down the wing for me. They also have Emerson, who they could recall
Lyon have said no to that, and I don't think they can force the loan, apparently. Okay.
Lyon right now are in such a bad way.
Yeah, true.
If Emerson says I'm going to go back, screw you. But whatever. Maybe not.
Lyon are saying that
it's not straightforward,
been asked,
right?
No, allowed it.
I think they're okay if Reece James is back soon. If Reece James is out for a while, then I think you need to start. You need to really start thinking about it.
Yeah.
Manchester City, meanwhile, go 8 clear at the top with a 1-0 win over Brentford. Jules, I thought this was more of a grinded out win, but no less important. One shot on target in the first half?
Yeah, one shot. The goal by Foden that he took really well. Great cross by De Bruyne, who's been really good in the last four games. You know, it was the one where we were saying, like, okay, maybe when De Bruyne comes back.
Basically, every chance was like a perfectly placed De Bruyne pass.
Usually one touch as well, so it doesn't even control the ball. It goes, I thought it was a bit underwhelming, but they just controlled it. At some point, they had 82 or 83% of the ball, which was like great, away from home in the Premier League.
You can say it's control. That's interesting, though, because Brentford had, what, like 11 players out? I don't know. They had like the bus driver playing at this stage, right?
Yeah, it was.
And
a lot of changes.
And still, they're not creating chances. And if you're not creating chances.
But are you not because you don't really want to? Are you not because you scored so early? 60 minutes
listen,
in, they were 1-0 up.
Yeah, that's fine. But you still need to create chances. Because if you don't create chances, especially against a team like Brentford, given how good they are with the second balls, given how good they are at taking shots, you know, anything can happen.
Yeah, true.
So,
that's true. That's
you know, look, I think it was more, he looked at his team, he knows what he has. It was gutsy, it was grinded out. Let's get the 3 points in the bag and let's move on.
Yeah.
You know, we gave you the scintillating 25 minutes against Leicester.
Yeah, exactly.
That's our cameo. That's when we play the hits, let's move on.
Exactly. Meanwhile, Gab, it's official. Ferran Torres is a Barcelona player. Before I ask you if it's a good deal or not, how can you announce it when the window is not even open and Fiorentina, for example, are waiting for the 3rd of Jan to announce Ikoné? And I'm pretty sure a lot of other clubs who have deals in place are waiting. But no, Barca is just like, hey, look, him with the shirt, training, etc., when it's not even allowed yet.
I think Man City announced it too.
Yeah.
I've spent a lot of time on this. So you can do a deal to transfer a contract whenever you want.
Yeah.
The transfer window is actually a registration window. So you can't actually register the transfer with FIFA, with what they call FIFA TMS, Transfer Matching System, until the window officially opens in Spain, which I think is January 1st, maybe January 3rd. So you have to wait until that to do it, right? So right now he's just a guy who's hanging out at the Camp Nou, right?
Yeah.
And Barcelona, presumably, are paying his wages. Then on top of that, they have to go and register him with the Spanish league, because obviously they're way over their spending cap for this season. They're going to have to shift a whole bunch of players to do it. I ran through the numbers. I reckon that they need to free up. I reckon that he's going to cost them, between amortization and wages, possibly commission, roughly 8 to 9 million euros between now and the end of the season. Which is why another reason I don't understand why not take him on loan with an obligation to buy. I thought would have made a lot more sense.
Yeah.
So to free up that amount, so to be able to spend that amount, because of the 4-to-1 ratio in spending, they have to find 32 million plus in savings. So some of that will come from half a season's wages of Sergio Aguero. The rest, I don't know. I think they're going to have to sell Sergino Dest.
So if they don't sell anyone, that means Ferran Torres won't be able to...
He'll be able to train.
He won't be able
Barcelona.
To play.
Can eat seafood.
He can go to the Sagrada Familia, but he can't play.
No, he can't play. If they can't register him, he can't play. It's as simple as that. Wow. Now, one of the things that was supposed to make the Torres deal possible was Ousmane Dembele taking a pay cut and extending his contract.
No.
Jules, reports right now suggest that won't happen.
Ousmane, who got married, by the way. Well done, Ousmane, for getting married. Big party. He said no. They said no. Why would I take a pay cut? I'm out of contract in the summer.
Yeah. But you know what? This shows to me that he listens to our show. Because on Monday, when Nadim and I did the show, I said, Ousmane, don't sign the contract now. There's no reason for you to do it. Incidentally, if he takes a pay cut, it wouldn't become effective until next season anyway. So, no.
Exactly.
Don't do it.
And
Wait.
You know what? He knows he's going to get big offers. I think there's a lot of interest for him.
I don't think there is. But,
there is.
You know,
but,
okay, we'll
you
see.
He might well stay.
But he may stay, yeah. But there's no reason to put pen to paper now.
Xavi wants to want him to stay. I think he loves being at the club. And Gab, Dembele is one of three players, this Ousmane Dembele, to test positive of COVID ahead of the trip to Mallorca for Barcelona on Sunday. The other two are Umtiti and, more damaging for the team, Gavi.
Oh, you think Gavi's absence is more relevant than Umtiti? I'm sorry,
nah,
Samuel.
Kid,
because we love... But yeah, funnily enough, Dembele gets married, big party, COVID. Oh, look, you know, I'm sure it's all just a coincidence.
Don't start.
It's all just a coincidence.
Be happy for him to get married.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, how about some more quick hits? Let's get this COVID stuff out of the way, Jules. We already had capacity restrictions in the Bundesliga. Now we're getting them in France and Italy too, though not in England. What's your take?
Yeah, I don't know why England is the only country where there's no restrictions.
They have restrictions in Scotland, Wales, because those are other pretenders. Yeah.
In France, it's 5,000 fans maximum in a stadium, regardless, which is completely stupid, but regardless of how big your stadium is.
So if a tiny stadium, it's still 5,000.
Yeah, so it's packed. But if you've got a 60,000 seater, then obviously it's not so much, but which is crazy. But you know, you see the intention in England for now. No restrictions. Let's see what happens. In Serie A, Gab, they're tightening the rules even further on players. You can only play if you've been vaccinated with two jabs or if you've recovered from COVID in the past 4 months.
Yeah, so this is the super green pass, as they call it. It doesn't just apply to Serie A players. It applies to anybody performing any kind of sporting activity. They've had these rules in place already to go into bars and restaurants and gyms and so on, and they're simply extending it to professional athletes. It's going to be interesting, though, because same thing in France.
Yeah, same thing, exactly.
Here in England, we've heard 1 in 6 players aren't vaccinated, right?
Yeah.
So I'm really curious to see, you know, have there been unvaccinated players in Serie A who've slipped through the cracks?
Yeah.
Because like I said, if you don't want to vaccinate yourself, you need to show that COVID recovery. Otherwise, you're not playing.
Yeah.
We're taping this Thursday morning. Manchester United play in a few hours against Burnley. But Jules, they had an absolute stinker on Monday night at Newcastle, drawing 1-1. And it's not me saying it. It's Ralf Rangnick using the German term for stinker.
Who said, like, we have to play better as a team. Yeah.
That first half.
It was just horrendous with the ball. I mean, they conceded a goal early, which I don't think helps against a team like that.
They could have conceded three goals.
Yeah, easily.
As wonderful as your boy Saint-Maximin is, he's the human highlight reel. He's the new football's answer to Dominique Wilkins.
Paris born and bred, you know.
Paris born and bred, obviously. But
that save by De Gea was very special for sure. But it was terrible. With Cristiano was on the edge.
He was lucky to stand
the pitch. Yeah, on that red card and that challenge in the first half too. I mean, I don't know. I see what Rangnick says when he says, listen, we need time to work, and because of COVID, we didn't have enough time. So, you know, maybe the progress that you would have expected earlier will come later a bit, but they need to...
You're not going to get it. Yeah. You're playing a system that none of these players have ever played before.
Okay,
they're not suited for the system.
Same with Conte and Spurs.
No, but it's completely different. They've played in a back three before. It's not like it's entirely alien to them.
Well, you tell me that now. By now, you didn't expect to see some improvement or some changes in the way United are playing.
Maybe Spurs have a better manager. I don't know. But it was funny, too, just about how badly suited they are. When they made the last changing moves, Bruno Fernandes, even deeper in front of the back four, just to keep, because he wants him on the pitch because he can play.
I mean, I know, but all he was doing was shouting at Varane for not passing in the ball 1 yard on the right. And I was like, surely, structurally, this is
at least
he'll
get plenty of the ball in that position.
Yeah. Tottenham drew 1-1 with 10-man Southampton. Gab, Antonio Conte won't be happy about that, even though he did set a club record.
He set a club record. By the way, this is one of my pet peeves. Those fugazi, off-brand, stupid club records. He's gone 7 games undefeated since taking over. He's beating the record set by who? Jointly held by former Spurs legends Jacques Santini and Tim Sherwood.
Oh, right? I love it.
I don't think Conte wants us to talk about it when he's associated with those guys. But anyway.
English people love doing that. They do it the same now with Rangnick and Solskjaer. Rangnick's first 4 games, Solskjaer's last 4 games.
So dumb. They should have done better. Conte said so. They had the chances.
Yeah,
I think a couple refereeing decisions. That offside, where they draw the line, is very, very close. Unlucky for Harry Kane. I don't think they played that badly, but obviously, it's going to feel like 2 points
dropped. 2 points, yeah.
Now, let's have some Paris Saint-Germain fun and fortuitously bring up Lionel Messi to drive clicks. Jules, he scored one goal in Ligue 1 this season, which is very bad, but he has 5 goals in 6 games in the Champions League, which is very good.
Yes.
What's your expert assessment to explain this disparity?
First, let me see that he's very much enjoying his holidays back in Rosario in Argentina, having a lot of fun, a lot of party. You can see him even dancing, the move.
The cumbia,
dance move.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ligue 1 is
tougher than the Champions League.
It's tough, my man. It's tough. You know, one of the best leagues in the world. Easy. You find it hard because it's so physical, tactical. No, listen, he hits the post 6 times. So already, to put it that way, he could have had, I think, easily 5 or 6 more assists had Mbappe, Icardi, Di Maria, or Neymar better finishers. It's too simplistic to just say, oh, look, only one goal in Ligue 1.
Statistical variance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, of course, at times he hasn't been good. I think he needed a bit of time to adapt to the league and the country, the new life, etc. But there's no worry to have about Leo. Don't worry at all. Lorenzo Insigne is out of contract in the summer at Napoli, and reportedly he could be on his way to MLS. Gab, with Toronto FC offering him a big, big deal. Toronto FC, loads of money, a tiny Italian forward. There's a sense of déjà vu there.
Oh, there certainly is, and which is why everybody and their mother was tracking down Sebastian Giovinco to ask him about his experience. And you know what? He said everybody's putting out this figure. Oh, it's so much money. 11.5 million euros net plus
net.
4 million in bonuses. Even if he doesn't get the bonuses, again, for those who like to think in pounds per week, we're talking like more than 350 grand a week. You know, crazy money. Yeah, because that's not what they're offering. People always make this mistake between gross salaries and net salaries. It does my head in.
It's a big mistake.
It does Giovinco's head in, too, because he came out and he said, I had the same thing when I went. Everybody said I was making this enormous amount of money. I thought so, too. And then I got this. It's like, wait a minute. I got to pay tax on this? It's not already withheld by the club? Giovinco said it was interesting. Giovinco said it had a great time. He said it cost him his international career. I don't think it's going to cost Insigne, because Insigne is far more established in the Italian national team than Giovinco was at the time.
More important player.
I think he's going to stay, though, in the end. The guy's Napoli born and bred.
What? But you don't think he's going to go to Toronto? I was looking forward to seeing him at the Raptors game with Drake, his best friend.
Wear those silly jerseys that say, like, the North.
Course.
Which, by the way, Raptors fans, you're actually not the North. You're the South.
Don't be mean to Raptors fans.
I'm not being mean. I'm just pointing out, like, geography. No,
so
like,
you see,
North would be like Yellowknife or Whitehorse.
You think he's going to stay and Napoli want him to stay?
Napoli want him to stay, but on their terms, right? Because they're cutting wages. And look, they have other players. They've got Chucky Lozano. Yeah. They've got Osimhen. I think Elif Elmas. You know, and they've got players who are earning a lot of money, and he's one of them. So look, time will tell. I don't have strong feelings about this, one way or the other. But in the end, it means a lot when you're from Naples and you get to play for Napoli.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So many free transfers out there. You can even get yourself a World Cup winner. It's your boy, Hugo Lloris. Jules, why is he not sticking around? Where is he going? And where are Spurs looking?
You can also get a second one in Djibril Sidibe, by the way, the Monaco right back. If you want to, Belay, let's talk about Hugo. I want him to stay. He's been at Spurs 10 years. I think he's been a great servant, a great captain for that club. I think fans want him to stay. I don't know what Antonio Conte wants to do, what fees. I know for sure that they haven't started talking because Hugo is focused on the season.
Sorry, wait.
But he's a new manager. Yeah, but still.
Are you suggesting that Spurs would want to talk to him, but he's like, oh no, I'm just
no,
focused
no, no,
on
no, I just don't. I don't think they've sat down yet. I think that's fine. I don't think you need
maybe
to
they
sat
should
down
because the reserve goalkeeper who basically doesn't even play in the, you know, I mean, he is the rapping goalkeeper, Pierluigi Golini. Check him out on YouTube.
He
can actually rap, but he never plays. He doesn't even play in the League Cup, from what I can recall. So they need a goalkeeper, right?
Yeah, but they might well keep Lloris and everything's fine.
Just take the time.
Well, yeah, just take
the
time.
Does he want to stay? He's been linked with Nice.
Well, yeah, this is his hometown. You know, this is where it all started for him, his career. So
pretty sweet, man. Nice, Boulevard des Anglais. Come on, man.
Yeah, I would like him to go back to France the same way, but I would want him to stay as well. It'd be interesting to follow. Gab, we've had plenty.
Wait, do Paris Saint-Germain need another free transfer goalkeeper?
Hang on, how many do we still have? 9 goalkeepers in the first team squad, so I think we're fine. Gab, we've had plenty of games cancelled in the Premier League this season due to COVID and injuries and everything, but club still unhappy. Well, very unhappy. Why?
Okay, I think in the end it boils down to my favorite word, which is transparency when it comes to football, because the rules are not transparent for clubs. So they have a rule which says that essentially if you have one goalkeeper and 13 players who had previous league experience, then you have to play unless they give you special dispensation. If you have less than that, they have to call the game off. Problem is availability. Oh, look, my back hurts. I'm unavailable, gaffer. So between COVID, where they can't tell us who's tested positive for COVID. Oh, no, privacy laws. Oh, it's none of your business. No, it is my damn business. We're in business together. We're in a business together called the Premier League. We're playing each other. Let's have some freaking transparency.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Look, the NFL is far from perfect, right? In the NFL, clubs have to say, this guy's questionable. This guy's probable. People know what it means. Here, it's a big mystery until the end.
Yeah.
And so you have teams that get unhappy when their games don't get postponed. Say, why did that guy's game get postponed? The Premier League are like, we can't say anything.
This has been the biggest.
It's horrendous. Problem. It's unfair. You have other people. I mean, Gary Neville said, force them to play with academy players. And as much as I really like Gary Neville and I often agree with him, I'm like, well, wait a minute. This is the Premier League. If I want to see a bunch of academy players playing, I'll go watch the under 23 games.
Yeah.
Right? And where I pay a lot less. I think at some point there's also a fan argument,
exactly,
too.
Of course.
Where, no, if you've got, you know, 20 guys unavailable, I don't want to see some dudes I've never heard of who are from the academy playing. Why? Why should I do that? And why can you charge me, £80 to go sit at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium to go watch, like, you know, Troy Parrott's little brothers?
Yeah.
I don't get that either.
No, you're right. You're right.
Rant over. COVID aplenty at Real Madrid, too, ahead of their short trip to Getafe. Courtois, Vinicius, Camavinga, and Valverde all tested positive upon the return. Not good news for Carreto. Those are big absences.
Yeah, big absences. Courtois, especially. I mean, Courtois and Vini, really, the two that have carried that team.
You're being disrespectful to Benzema when you say that.
Benzema and Modric. I was going to add, and Karim the Dream, and Luka Modric as well. But it's big, especially when you think of the one who had COVID, who recovered and now back, but have you really recovered fully? Look at De Bruyne, who took forever to recover. So this is really worrying because Getafe, you know, not a pushover at all. And this is a big derby and it's a big game too. So it'll be interesting to see how Real Madrid do in that game. Matias Ginter is also...
By the way, sorry. I'm Benzema. I'm going to set you a homework assignment if you want to do it. You don't have to answer now.
Okay.
But this is the question. I'm going to set it out to our listeners too, because this really bugs me. Okay. So Benzema's been at the club for nearly 10 years now, right?
More than that.
More than 10 years, right? At that club, he's had a whole bunch of different managers, right? Yeah. From Mourinho to Rafa Benitez to Ancelotti to Zidane.
Yeah.
And yet, it's only the last couple of years that he has really exploded, been given all the responsibility and so on. And people are like, oh, look, you're one of the best center forwards in the world, right?
Mm.
Now, here's what I wonder. All these highly paid, very smart football people before, the smart technical directors, the smart scouts, did he get better all of a sudden? Or did all these very smart people not see it? To the point that they say, oh no, we need to go and sign Gareth Bale to go with Cristiano because look, Benzema's just this. Or Mourinho saying, oh, you know, when Higuain's unavailable, I want to go hunting with a dog, but now Benzema, Higuain's hurt, I got to go with Benzema, so I have to go hunting with a cat, and saying all this stuff. Did they not see what he could do?
I think they
did he get better? No, don't answer. Don't answer.
Okay.
Give me an informed answer down the road. And also, listeners, feel free to hit us up. Because I genuinely want to know the answer to this question because I am fascinated by it. Okay.
Matias Ginter is also off contract in Jude, Gab. And he says he will leave Borussia Mönchengladbach, doesn't want to sign a new deal at all. Are you surprised that he's not getting more buzz? Are you a Ginter
fan? He's been linked
fan?
With a couple teams. Ginter's interesting, right? Because he's like the size of a building, right? Yeah. In terms of height, anyway. But he's got attacking midfielder skills.
He can play right back,
He can pass.
Right back,
He can, you know, he's got vision. He's not super quick, but he's not slow either. He's not slow for a guy who's 6'5".
I know, okay, but you know, he's got Dortmund written all over it, yeah? He's got Dortmund written all over it.
This guy, Ginter Hummels, you reckon? I don't know, man. More bad news for Lyon. They've been thrown out of the French Cup after their game against Paris FC had to be abandoned for crowd trouble. Yeah. Jules, the French power is that big, I think, finally cracking. Now, this is pretty
finally
chucked out.
Yeah, finally. And this is because it's the federation who took the decision, not the league, who had been assessing all the crowd trouble that we had in Ligue 1 before. Because this was a French Cup game, it was a different discipline committee, if you want, and they had to be tough. We said it. It was horrible. Both Paris FC and Lyon have been chucked out. They've been hit with huge fines as well. No travelling fans for Lyon away for the rest of the season in the league. PFC would have to play in neutral venues for the next five home games. So big sanctions, I think they had to take. Really, I know it's not nice, but they had to take, and they had to be really firm as well.
Yes, listeners, their PFC and your FCP, right?
Juventus is still deciding what to do over Paulo Dybala's contract. Gab, I thought this was sorted. He was going to sign. He expires in June. But in the meantime, they also linked to Sassuolo's Scamacca.
Yeah, for me, this is a no-brainer. Paulo, bye-bye.
Really?
Yeah, it's. I mean, he's 28. You're going to give him a ton of money.
Oh.
Or at least wait. This is an Aubameyang situation all over again. But the difference is that Aubameyang was hugely productive. And Dybala hasn't been because he's injured, because he has COVID, because he has this, because he has a boo-boo. I'm sorry. No, you reward players like that who are crucial to your team. He hasn't been crucial for Juventus for years. Just wait till the end of the season. And if you're going to resign him on your terms. Scamacca, like, he's hugely hyped when he was 16, 17 years old. Kind of, some people suggest it might have something to do with a very present dad, let's say. I think he made some poor decisions with some of the clubs he went to and so on, but this year he's banging him in. He's 22 years old. I think he would be a tremendous signing for Juve if you can afford it. He'd have no problem playing with Morata, as we've seen Morata's versatility. And if it means you sacrifice Dybala, build for the future.
Wow.
It's finally happened. Jorge Jesus has been sacked as coach of Benfica. Jules finishing ahead of Barcelona and qualifying for the knockout round of the Champions League do not save you in the end if you're third in the Super League.
Third place in the league and being smashed by Porto in the Cup. I think that was really the last straw. They lost 3-0. They were terrible.
Strange, because he's such a pleasant man.
Yeah, he's such a pleasant man. You know, obviously, there were a lot of issues before that, even not related to result and the way the team was playing within the dressing room as well, within the club. We said Benfica going through a lot of troubles too, overall as a club. So, you know, it felt like it was always going to happen. Poland coach Paulo Sousa has quit and will take over Flamengo in Rio de Janeiro. Gab is just a few months away from a playoff that could take him to the World Cup. Does that make any sense to you then, to leave that to go to Brazil?
I'm very surprised.
Me too.
It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. By the way, Paulo Sousa and Jorge Jesus, both Portuguese.
Yes.
Jorge Jesus had coached Flamengo previously, of course. It's weird to me because you have a shot at the World Cup. I know Flamengo. I know the history. I know
they pay well as well.
They pay well. I think Paulo Sousa probably has enough money at this stage. But
yeah,
Rio's, you know, nice place to live if you have money. But it seems odd to me that you're just saying goodbye to the World Cup. I think there's stuff behind the scenes that must have happened that we don't know about. I would assume, because I would have seen World Cup would be pinnacle. Now, I feel like I talk about this every show, but Jules, it does finally seem that Anthony Martial is a step closer to Sevilla, which I guess means they won't be taking Luke de Jong back from his loan at Barcelona.
Yeah, I mean, the first offer was rejected by United. I think they're getting much closer now in terms of maybe a loan fee and more wages being paid by Sevilla and all that kind of stuff. Monchi is really keen, as we've been saying from the beginning, really want Martial. I think Martial is really attracted to La Liga and to play in Spain, So I think this would make a lot of sense. And for the bad de Jong, I think even for Sevilla, he's not good enough anyway. So Cadiz is probably most likely.
Can Barcelona just send him back like that?
I think so.
Or maybe they could make him part of the Martial deal and send him to United.
Oh my God, imagine. That would be great. That would be a really good idea. Gab, as we record this, we're less than 48 hours away from the deadline set by the Italian FA on Salernitana, for someone to come and buy Salernitana of Lotito. I assume nobody has stepped forward yet. Is it nothing?
No, the price keeps going down and down. Again, for those who weren't watching, Claudio Lotito, who owns Lazio, also owns Salernitana, were promoted last season. In the summer, he got his battery of evil harpy lawyers to go and file a whole bunch of injunctions. Because, of course, you're not allowed to own two teams in the same league. They came up with some stupid compromise where they appointed two guys they called the trustees, whose job it was to sell the club by Christmas.
One day, Lotito's kids or something?
Yeah, I think it's like Lotito's dentist and like his his hygiene. I don't know. Whatever. The point is, it didn't happen.
Sad.
He has to sell it. The fans aren't fussed. Honestly, the ultras are saying, we don't care. We just want out of this nonsense. If we have to start over again in the third division, we'll start over again in the third division. We'll start over again lower. Because for us, it's a team that counts. So I think somebody will come forward between now and midnight on December 31st. And if they do that, and if it's a credible offer, they get another 45 days to negotiate. But so far, none of the offers put forward have been credible. And, you know, 15 million euros...
I mean, there's a great deal to make there because it's still a Serie A. I know they're struggling and they probably will go down.
I think
still,
they definitely will go down.
It's a Serie A team, you know, with some decent players there.
The playing squad has some assets. I just think Lotito's going to lose a lot of money on this. And frankly, I don't feel sorry for him one bit.
Me neither.
Arsenal's Mikel Arteta has tested positive for COVID, Jules. We wish him well. Just to note that it was his positive test back in March 2020, which set off the Premier League shutdown.
Yeah, after that Olympiacos game. It was. Now it's him. They've had a few players as well in the last few days. Fufare, who missed the game against Sunderland, for example, in the League Cup and things like that. So let's see what happens in the next few days. But let's hope he's good. Norwich City have reported one of their own supporters to the police, accusing him of racially abusing Crystal Palace players in their Premier League game a couple of days ago. Gab, your thoughts?
My thoughts is applause. Nothing but applause to Norwich. And obviously, it's Norwich City, but it's Norwich City fans who presumably were with them, who identified him and spotted him. You're not being a rat if you do this. You're protecting your own club. You're protecting your own players. You're doing the right thing because nobody should be racially abused in their workplace. Yeah. Simple as that.
Yeah.
Mauro Icardi has somehow been linked with Manchester United. Jules, I gave my thoughts on the FC show. Let's hear yours. I don't understand. Who is it?
But please come and take him. Please come and take him. Take Wanda. Take all the children. Take all the circus. Everything you want.
I'm trying
please.
To imagine a worse fit at United.
Oh my God.
In every way, shape, or form.
Oh, man. I almost want to see it happen. I almost want it. It won't happen, but I would love to see it happening. Sticking with United, Ralf Rangnick has reportedly told Dean Henderson that he can't live on loan, Gab, because he needs three senior goalkeepers. Okay, does that make sense to you? And I thought they already had like Lee Grant and Heaton. So that's three.
Maybe they don't count Lee Grant because he's old. I don't know. Well, why are you paying?
He doesn't want dessert because Cristiano doesn't eat desserts. Like,
why are you paying Lee Grant to be there if you don't consider him one of your senior goalkeepers?
It's crazy.
No, it makes no sense. I don't understand why you need 50 goalkeepers. Dean Henderson has a deal through 2025. He's 24 years old. He obviously, if he's fit, he needs playing time. I don't understand. I'm hoping something's lost in translation, or maybe Rangnick's not so sure about Heaton, or maybe he's not sure about De Gea that he feels he needs to keep Henderson. But the guy, clearly, goalkeepers need to play. He's a very good goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Hopefully he can play somewhere. Sporting Catalunya. God, I love these guys.
Oh, my God.
Are reporting that Philippe Coutinho could be on his way to Arsenal.
Oh, my.
Oh, wait. Let me turn this into British tabloid transfer talk. Arsenal have identified Philippe Coutinho, who they've never heard of before, and have no possible way of getting to it. No, I'm just kidding. Jules, I get the sense that all these stories, like Umtiti to Newcastle, they're all about making Ferran Torres possible.
We're trying to, yeah. The thing is, I can tell you that Coutinho is not going to go to Arsenal. I don't know where Coutinho is going to go.
Do you think, given that we know Philippe Coutinho's advisor, we've had him on the show, I think he's had a bunch of other players at Ederson. I think he might even have Edu's personal.
Yes.
I can't be sure. He might even have his direct number. That maybe if Arsenal wanted Coutinho, they might have made a move for him earlier.
Already? Yeah. And also, we know a few people at Arsenal, and we can tell you that Coutinho is not going to go to Arsenal. But this is part of, especially the Catalan media, this is what they this is what they do. They do that a lot. They do that with every player who suddenly gets linked with everybody, especially very often in the Premier League, funnily enough. Yeah. Right? It's rarely in France or in
Umtiti
Germany.
To Man City.
Umtiti everywhere.
Ricky Puig to Bayern. Luke de Jong to Liverpool.
Oh, my God. Ajax Sebastian Haller got very annoyed when he was asked by a journalist, Gab, if he would rather be joining Ivory Coast and play in the AFCON or staying with his club. And you understand why. I mean, come on. The disrespect for the African Cup of Nations has been out of this world in the last few weeks.
Yeah, this is just really, really ugly. I mean, okay, it's fair to ask of a player who's uncapped and who, you know, where a federation goes for him, like they did, you know, back with Matip, where there was a question and so on.
Yeah.
But Haller's already played a whole bunch of times for the Ivory Coast. He played in World Cup qualifying for them a couple months ago, right? What kind of a question is this?
That's so bad.
What are we talking about here?
I know.
Yeah, you're in a race, but you know the guy's from Ivory Coast. I don't understand why we feel. Unfortunately, I do understand why we feel we can take such liberties.
I know.
With the Africa Cup of Nations.
We don't do that with the World Cup or the Euros. We're like, or the South America, the Copa America.
But of course they did with South American qualifying, right? But, yeah, but you know, I think good for him to just stand up and say, you know, effectively say, screw you. This is important to me. Rebecca Welch will become the first woman to take charge of an FA Cup third round game next week. Jules, this is a big deal.
It is a big deal, Gab. Yeah, I think so. She's not the first woman referee to referee an FA Cup.
But the third round is when the big boys come in, the Premier League teams.
Exactly. It's when it really matters. Yeah. So well done. You know, well done. I really hope she does well.
She's officiated League Two already.
Exactly, yeah, which is fantastic. It's, a huge step forward. And, you know, in France, we've got Stéphanie Frappard, who's been amazing, really. Refereeing big men games too, so let's hope that Rebecca Welch can just follow the path of Stéphanie Frappard as well. The Italian Referees Association are reportedly considering setting up a new website complete with videos and interviews allowing match officials to explain decisions. I mean, Gab, come on,
you don't like this.
No, I do. Because in every country...
Our colleague Gail Johnson would bookmark that straight away.
Yeah,
he would learn Italian just so he could
exactly
watch
what I was going to say. Because in a lot of countries, we don't hear at all, or not enough certainly, from referees. You know, after games, explaining why they did this, why they took that decision.
So originally they're sounding like, it's going to be a channel. And I'm like, all right, you can't put 24 hours of this crap on television. Right? But... look, if it's going to be an opportunity for people to explain why decisions were taken, do it calmly and go and admit, this guy done screwed up. This guy was good. This guy was bad. We need to lift this whole veil of secrecy. We need to stop with stupid things like thinking that a good referee is also automatically going to be a good VAR, as we've discovered many times, especially in England. That's not
many
the case.
Many times.
They're different skills. Yeah. They're human. Let's judge them the way we judge the players, like athletes.
Yes.
Right, that brings us to an end, Jules, but shall we come back next year and do this?
Oh, yeah, 2022.
All right, until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjules.